Hey everyone, I want to ask a small favor. Each new season, I look at how the last one went, and I look for ways to improve the show. But you see, I only see the show from my perspective. I'd like to see it from yours. So, to get a better idea of what's working, I created a survey, and I kept it really simple. Just a handful of questions. If you feel called to and you're willing to share some feedback, I'd greatly appreciate it. Your reward for helping me is the knowledge that you're helping make the Soul Podcast even better. You can find a link to the very short survey at the bottom of the episode description. And thank you in advance for helping. The statesman and philosopher Edmund Burke said, "No power so effectively robs the mind of all its powers of acting and reasoning as fear." Welcome to the Soul Podcast. I'm Stacy Wheeler. Burke said those words nearly 300 years ago. They're still true. But is fear bad? After all, fear is an instinct. It's a reflexive way to react to perceived danger. We can even say that keeping us alive is why it exists. When we're in a life or death situation, fear is the hero. And we've all had life or death moments, even if we don't think of them that way. If you've ever stepped into a boat from a dock or stood on the edge of a cliff, you are one wrong step away from danger or death. We've all had moments of quick response where our pulse shot sky high and we made a split-second decision, like when driving. And that split-second decision was our fear response, saving the day. That's healthy fear. And then there's unhealthy fear. Not the keep us alive one, the other one. Unhealthy fear comes from what-ifs, scenarios we play over in our minds which lead us to envision worst-case scenarios in our lives. And these are usually things with no real physical danger. It's the things we have emotional thoughts around that we tend to get wrapped around. We've all known someone who struggled with a decision that would alter the direction of their life. Odds are you have. I know I have. These are decisions that lead towards a change we hope will be good, but we fear might make our life less enjoyable or worse. We hope for one outcome, but we fear another. And so often, we don't do anything. The fear makes us freeze. Dark thoughts drive these fears, and the thoughts can make us freeze in our tracks, and we're stuck. We can't move. You know, it's those moments when you might think something like, "Well, what if I ask her, and she says no?" The fear is that you will be rejected. Rejection itself will not harm you in any measurable way. Literally no measurable way. No long-term damage, no cuts, no scrapes. But many of us fear it just the same. Maybe there's a proposal you want to make at work, to make a change you think will be helpful, but you're resisting saying anything for fear they won't like the idea. Again, fear of rejection. See the pattern? Rejection's a big one. Now, neither of these fears can lead to physical pain or death. It's only a sense of failure. In other words, internal pain, not physical pain. The American writer Andrew Clements said, "Fear doesn't need doors or windows. It works from the inside." It's natural that fear works from the inside. It's a deep instinctual response to danger. It's our helper, our friend. But it can become our enemy when we allow it to place scary thoughts on the screens of our imagination. Fear is meant for big life-saving jobs, but we assign it housekeeping tasks, light lifting. It's like having a pro athlete on the grade school team. It's a bit much. Fear gives its all when it's given a task, so we must be careful what tasks we give it. If we let fear play with the what-ifs in our mind, fear is going to act like those are life or death things. When we play out all the what-ifs, when we linger on possible outcomes, we find new scenarios to fear. Our imagination paints terrible pictures in our mind, and we make decisions based on these pictures. Fear is a dark room where negatives develop. Fear is a beast that, when we feed it, becomes stronger. It is only in depriving it that we become stronger, and fear becomes weaker. And guess what? We're all full of fear, doubts, and self-judgment. It may not seem that way, but it's true. We've all met someone who seems fearless, right? They're not. When someone appears fearless, there's one of two things going on. They're either faking it, or they're standing up to their fears. When you act like you're not afraid and push forward, You're likely doing it out of fear of the judgment of others that you're scared. You're not doing it because you want to face your fears, probably. You're doing it because of a bigger fear driving you, that fear of judgment. Sometimes we actually do go straight for our fears. When I was a kid, there was this boy named Joe in my neighborhood. He would do the most outrageous things if you dared him. Put a kick me sign on the teacher, someone would say. And he'd do it. I dare you to steal a beer, another one suggested. Joey would walk right in and do it. Sometimes he got in trouble, but he nearly always he'd take the dare. He and I were close enough friends that I also knew he was insecure. His home life was tough and his father was pretty stern. He was forced to wear a military-style buzz cut by his dad, which made him stand out. He took a lot of ribbing from the guys about this. And he had a deep fear of not being accepted by other kids. So if someone dared him to do something outrageous, he'd do it. Because his fear of rejection was more frightening than his fear of pain or punishment. So sometimes we lie to ourselves about the fear. Sometimes we try to bury it in bravado. Those who pretend either become prisoners of their strongest fear, like Joey's fear of judgment. By denying the underlying fear there, suppressing it. They don't challenge fear. They pretend it isn't there. They lie to themselves. They may not even understand what's going on. All the while, they seem terribly strong to those outside of them because what we see is them doing fearless things. But all the while, they aren't standing up to the thing that frightens them the most. They're adapting to it to hide from it, to mask it. There's an old notion of whistling in the graveyard. When we act as if we're not scared, when it's a normal thing that we should be, when we act as if we're doing this for one of two reasons. Either we don't want to admit to ourselves that we're scared, or we don't want to admit to the rest of the world that we are. You see, it's a workable model for a while. We can fake it one way or another, but we're lying to ourselves, and lying to ourselves keeps us from evolving. We can never become our best selves when we pretend we don't have fear. We all have fear. The best option is when we admit to ourselves our fears, when we lean into them, when we face them. And in that space, we begin a great evolution. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "Do the thing you fear, and the death of fear is certain." And he was right. That's exactly the way it works, if you head straight into it. 9 years ago, I started what I now recognize as a new leg of my spiritual journey. You know, it really took off when I learned a simple secret that has been hiding in plain sight. When I moved towards fear, I always won. To be clear, I don't mean fear of things like a guy carrying an axe handle on a dark street. That's probably a good kind of fear, you know, the kind you should pay attention to. You don't want to go after that one. I'm talking about the fears created by the stories in my mind. These are like a massive bucket of crabs that I'm carrying around with me. But this bucket of crabs, it's in my mind, right? You see, way back 9 years ago or so, I attended this weekend workshop. It was recommended by a friend. In the handful of days I was there, I pulled out and confronted fears. You know, some of those crabs in my bucket. I confronted fears. I wasn't intending to do that. That's just what was on the list. And after I confronted them, I realized they were gone. Those crabs were no longer in my bucket. This blew my mind because I'd suddenly realized I had the power to do that to any of my fears. And I'd had that power all along. I just didn't know it. I decided to reach into that bucket and start pulling out my fears one by one. The next several years were a blur of me just going after my fears. The results were amazing. It turned out all I had to do was go after it to test if my fear was real, and the fear would crumble. Back then, if someone had told me that idea, I would have thought, yeah, some people can do that. Not all of us. And if you're thinking that right now, the same thing, understand that thought is coming from fear. Fear hides in the dark places of our mind. Fear is the beast that becomes stronger when we feed it. So how do you weaken it? You stop feeding it. To all things, there is an equal opposite. Instead of feeding the beast of fear, feed its light twin, hope. You do this by testing your fears, by moving towards them. That's all you must do. Pick one small fear and move towards it. When I was in high school, there was a kid named Ian, and he decided I would be a fun target to pick on. I'm not sure why. He made up a nickname for me and taunted me with it. These seemed mostly for the benefit of his friends, this heckling. I tried to ignore him, but he kept increasing the taunting. He was turning up the volume, so I guess because I wasn't standing up. But it started to get to me. Soon, school became less enjoyable. And I even avoided the halls where I thought he and his friends might be. I was intimidated, because they were in a group. I continued to try and ignore him, but I felt humiliated that I'd allowed someone to treat me that way. The story in my mind was, I'm acting like a weakling. But fear still kept me from acting. I was becoming angry and wanted to stand up to him, and my mind swirled with all the possibilities of what might happen if I pushed back. But I'd had enough. I was done tolerating the abuse. Since I'd been in high school, I'd been in one fight, and I had my nose broken in that fight. So I was fearful of another. The fear of pain was smaller than the fear of humiliation for me. See, I went towards the one that was the less bad. I didn't know that's what I was doing at the time, but that's what I did. I started working with my older brother after school, practicing fighting moves, punching a pillow, reacting to jabs. I spent 2 weeks of Christmas break planning my move. I was going to stand up to Ian, even if it meant a fight. After weeks of his taunting and fearing his reprisals, I intentionally walked down the hall I knew he'd be, in between classes. I was walking towards my fear, directly towards it. As I passed, he called me the name, and I slammed him against the wall and held him there. His eyes were filled with fear. He didn't expect me to stand up to him. I hadn't. I hadn't before. Why would I now? I was ready for a fight. I had already planned to fight. He'd never considered I'd push back. He was shocked. He made no attempt to fight back. In his eyes, I could see the fear of what I might do. He didn't know what to make of me. After a really short time, a teacher stepped in and made me release him. And he never again called me that name. Now, this is not a great example, because part of this danger was real, right? It wasn't a perceived danger in my mind. It's the potential for actual physical injury. But the fear that was shutting me down was the one I created in my mind. The story I told myself kept me stuck in place, as I looked at dozens of possible scenarios for how it might play out if I stood up. Going after the physical bully is not what this is about. But understand, fear is a bully in the hallway of your mind. When you stand firmly, the bully backs down. The bully fades away. So I learned this lesson young, but I didn't know that's what I learned. Years later, at the weekend workshop I mentioned, I was reminded of the lesson in a more subtle way, but I was shown the full lesson. Fear wasn't protecting me from physical danger. It was keeping me locked into fearful thoughts of things that couldn't physically harm me. So I kept reaching into my bucket of crabs. Started with some small fears. I had some fears of camping outside alone in the woods, so I packed my bags and I went to the woods. I took my dog, you know, we all need training wheels. I feared the judgment of strangers, so I went out wearing weird clothing and strange hats in public, you know, to allow myself to get judged. And I found that if people were judging me, it didn't matter. I was taking care of me. I was growing. No one said anything to me. If I read their faces, I might have concluded that they had certain thoughts about me, but maybe that was my projection, right? So why worry? No stranger ever said anything to me about my weird hat or weird clothes. If they had, it really wouldn't have mattered. They didn't understand the exercise I was doing. The words would only have been a judgment about what they thought it was about. Not about what was happening. Not about what it was actually about. Only I knew that. So as I pulled each fear out of my bucket, I released it. Then I moved to larger and larger fears. Man, I started leaning into some big ones. And each time I did, I got such a charge. You see, we think our fears are walls. When we lean into those walls of fear, the walls fall. That's because they were never really there. They were just imaginary walls we constructed in our minds. Fear is the architect and insecurity is the builder. And we just assume that they're real. We push, each wall falls, and it frees us to move outside of the prison of fear that we created, that we didn't even know that we were living in. And let me be clear about this. This is not a new idea. This has been known for a long, long, long time. About 3,000 years ago, Aristotle said, "He who has overcome his fears will truly be free." The same sentiment is said over and over and over again through antiquity. Around the same time, Epictetus said, "Men are not afraid of things, but of how they view them." So Aristotle said, "He who has overcome his fears will truly be free." Cool. We know that. Great. How do you do it? Well, you just go towards them, right? Now you know. Epictetus says, "Men are not afraid of things, but of how they view them." Most of the things we're afraid of aren't things. They're our perception of the meaning we attach. Do you get it? You see, it's not the thing that is scary as much as how we perceive it. It is the what ifs that scare us. It's the stories our minds tell us. And this is true even with the smallest things. Afraid to present an idea at work? Afraid to make the first move on someone you're attracted to? It's not because it's dangerous. There's no real danger. You wouldn't be injured or killed or maimed or hurt in some way that would take you time to recover from. Your fear comes from the story you tell yourself about that. It's how you view it that scares you. The potential harm is nearly nothing. Unhealthy fear can play in the background of our lives, affecting us in unacknowledged ways. The most unfortunate part is that we may not notice how it affects our lives. And that's because it doesn't take away what we have. It deprives us of what we might have if we faced our fears. When we don't move towards our fear, we never know what we have deprived ourselves of, what we could have had if we had moved towards our fears. The great Joseph Campbell said, "The cave you fear to enter holds the treasure you seek." Just on the other side of fear, that's where all the gold is. We can neglect it, we can leave it there, and we'll be okay. We'll get by. But we will never become the best version of ourselves. We will never achieve the things we could have if we had only gone towards our fear. When we let fear guide us, we miss out. Fear tells us we can't do it. It tells us people will judge us, that we're not good enough, or we're not smart enough. When we listen to our fear, we neglect our desire and hopes. Fear steals our dreams. To make the point that this is really, really well known, in case you haven't gotten the point yet, that this is a very old idea that's been very well known, I'm going to bombard you with some quotes about it. Rudyard Kipling said, 100 years ago or so, "Of all the liars in the world, sometimes the worst are our fears." Our fears make us lie to ourselves. More recently, Jack Canfield said, "Everything you want is on the other side of fear." See, the gold's in that cave. He's got to go to it. And we'll finish with one from good old Marcus Aurelius, who said, "It's not death that a man should fear, but he should fear never beginning to live." Fear does that. Fear keeps us from truly living. It keeps us from pursuing our dreams. And fear is not outside of us. It is inside of us. We created that beast. And we get to choose if we feed it. The way we stop feeding the fear is by embracing fear as a challenge. We do this by pushing down the walls of our perceived fear. Consider rejection. Let's say you get a no instead of a yes you were hoping for. And maybe that rejection hurts. But does it really? The effect rejection has on you is entirely dependent on how you interpret it. We only feel rejection when we take in someone's action and assign a meaning to it. So you've not really been hurt by the answer a person gave you. You've been hurt by the meaning you give to the person's reaction. You understand? So what do you say? Ready to push back on your fears? In the next episode, I'll take you through an exercise in finding fears to test. And I think you'll be surprised how many you have and how easily they fall when you go after them. Ready to pull the crabs out of your bucket? Listen to the next episode. And we'll grow together. Thank you for listening to the Soul Podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard, learned something new, or were just entertained, please tell your friends about the show and hit that follow button. This is the best way for other people to find the show. Check the show notes for links to supporting information as well as any books or other reading material related to this episode. I love making the Soul Podcast. My goal is to bring you more shows each season. If the show's spoken to you and you feel called to, please join our list of producers. You can become a producer for as little as $3 a month.
and each of you helps me get one step closer to making the Soul Podcast my full-time job. You can find a producer link in the show notes.